Welcome to the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast, taking you around the country, shedding light on the work of the Scottish FA from grassroots to coach development, and taking a look at the future of our game. On this episode, Greg Patterson and Stuart McLaren of the Scottish FA are joined by former Scotland international and first team coach at Fleetwood Town, Barry Nicholson.
We're joined by Barry Nicholson. Barry, thanks a lot for taking part in the podcast. You're currently taking part in a UEFA Pro Licence course. How have you found that up to now?
Yeah, brilliant, Stuart. Really enjoyed it. Really good group we've got. Lads and girl, obviously one girl with Pauline. And we've been taken right out of our comfort zone from day one. We've had some great speakers on the course. Over the summer there, we're obviously away to under-21s in Bologna for 6 days, so real togetherness amongst the group, and very challenging but really enjoyable.
And you're currently involved at Fleetwood.
Yeah.
Obviously being a former player there and stepped into coaching. How did that kind of journey come about, and why was it that you sort of decided that coaching was going to be the career for you? Is it something you fell into, or during the playing days, was that something that you always aspired to step into?
Yeah, it was probably not till I got down south to England where I really started thinking about sort of the future. When I was up here with Dunfermline and Aberdeen, I loved the managers that I worked for, but then when I moved down south to sign for Preston, it was really Alan Irvine that sort of caught my mind, really, of like the next step and how he prepared the team training sessions every day and set up the team to play on a Saturday. That was sort of got me thinking about the future and how I wanted my team to play and stuff. So it was really him that said, go and get them done, go and get the coaching badges done. So it was when I was still at Preston, I decided to come back up the road and do the B licence. Then I've done the Elite Youth A licence after that, then the A, and then the obviously getting accepted onto the Pro licence this last year. So it was when I moved down there, that's when I started thinking about it. And then finishing my playing career, it was actually Graeme Alexander. He was manager of Fleetwood at the time. I'd played a year under him at Fleetwood, and he asked me if I wanted to stop playing and take a brand new development squad. So at the time, I was about 34 at the time, and I decided that I wanted to keep playing for another year. So he said, well, you're not going to play often here. So then I decided to move back up to Scotland for 1 year, played with Kelly for a year, but halfway through that season he gave me the phone call again and said, listen, we've not started the development squad yet, but we're definitely going to start it next season. Do you want the job? So the decision was made, really. It was too good an opportunity for me to get back down the road to the family as well, because my wife and kids had stayed down. I was travelling back up and down when I was at Killy. So it got me back down the road, but it was like basically I accepted the role about 2 days before the League Two playoff final. They played against Burton in the playoff. So, and then I went away on holiday before the playoff final. So when I was on holiday, all of a sudden I became a development coach of a League One club because they won the playoff.
It's not bad.
So it was all, everything was sort of falling into place for me. It was brilliant, but basically turned up I met Graham during the summer, but turned up basically 2-3 days before pre-season started, trying to prepare my first pre-season with a development squad too, where I think about 6 or 7 boys. So it was very quickly just in the deep end sessions, recruiting, had to go and try and like look at players and have loads of trialists in, basically trying to build a squad. So a brilliant start for me, because it was just basically on you go, it's yours, we want you to kind of copy what we do at first team level but put your own spin in it. So it was just a total like free reign, really, to start my coaching career, which I found like brilliant for me.
I know, terrific. It was something we speak about quite often, is that on course learning, Greg, and off course and you know, the situations you find yourself in, and sometimes it kind of goes, you know, the opposite way about. You know, I think you find in a lot of vocations it's that formal study process, you know, going to university, learning all about your trade, and you get your qualification, and then they kind of let you loose. Where sometimes in football, the two go hand in hand, you mentioned, you know, and a lot of players obviously do that, look at coaching as a career, as the playing days wind down, and start going and getting the qualifications. There's so much, obviously, you can learn through that formal process. But, you know, when you get a baptism of fire like that, Barry, that's where a lot of learning takes place. And, you know, some people are more fortunate than others. Some take those first-team jobs straight away. and everybody knows it's results based. You know, others, as you say, fall into to situations like, say, yours, where it's, you know, a development score, or there's less recognisable pressures, and there's a lot more learning that probably goes along with it.
Yeah, I do wish I'd stayed with the development squad longer, because I think it would have been better for my learning. Stephen Graham left, and then Stephen Presley came in, and Stephen very quickly lost. Graham's staff eventually went with Graham, so there was a role at the first team level, and I got on really well with Stephen Presley and Neil McFarlane, and they quickly moved me up. But I wish I got probably maybe 2-3 years, maybe even longer than that, with the development squad, just to try different things. Because I think when you go to the like the first team level, especially when you're like a first team coach, you don't get to do tactical stuff, in my opinion, because it's the manager that does the tactical stuff. It's his way of playing, it's not your way of playing. Whereas I think if you've got a development squad, although you've got to sort of align it with what the first team are doing, principles and everything the same, I think you've got a chance to really bed in what you are as a coach. You know?
It's actually a very nice job without a lot of the pressure, isn't it? And your pressure is probably just trying to get those maybe 4 or 5 players up into that first team, you know, at the end of the season.
Yeah.
Rather than all the added pressures, and you see you're allowed to do things. And I remember chatting to, it reminds me again, I think I've mentioned Lee Carsley on this podcast a few times, but I remember chatting to Lee, and you know, he used to speak about, as you've said there, Barry, able to try different things that you wouldn't get, like giving the kit man a day off, so that the players had to learn to do the kit, or giving the sports scientists a day off so that they had to learn to make up their own protein shakes, or whatever it was. But he was doing that so that the players would then learn. But because at first team level, they're getting everything, you know, everything's pandered to them.
And it's usually the coaches telling the head coach or the manager's telling us what to impart. So it's and sometimes I sit and think I wish that I'd done younger as well, like even sort had just the steps. Me even I don't know about really young, but possibly 16s, a youth team, then the development squad. The development squad was quite young. It was like an under 19s, under 20s, but even just the steps, I feel that I've sort of missed that a little bit. And I speak to a few people down in England. There's a guy, Steve Eyre, who works with Fleetwood with Joey at the minute, and he's done it all. He finished playing really early, and then done the badges down south, but has worked at Man City's academy for a long, long time and went through the age groups. Mm-hmm. Right up, and then he was in at Huddersfield as a development coach, worked with Huddersfield's first team, then he's been manager of Rochdale himself. So when I speak to Steve, it's like, have I missed like doing right through?
Yeah, there's something in that. I know we've had Nick Cox on the podcast previously, and he did some other stuff when he was with us, and he speaks an awful lot about, you know, the old 10,000 hours myth, and flips it around a bit about 10,000 experiences for players, and, you know, getting them to play in their own age group and play against younger players and older players and anything else like that. And I think sometimes in coaching that same principle can apply. You know, you're right, you know, have you been in charge of your son or your nephew's grassroots team, where it's about herding cats just about sometimes, but about making it really enjoyable? Have you worked at a first team level, you know, in the professional aspect of the game, where it's very much about results and everything in between? And I think if you're going to be a well-rounded coach and develop a full skill set, I think you're right, you know, to have that range of experiences, which obviously takes a lot of time as well to nurture, that type of thing. Other than that, you know, you see lots of different people working in real niche areas, but they've only ever worked in that, so they become a specialist as, you know, a youth team coach or a reserve coach or a coach within the women's game, for example. But I think to develop that all-rounder, so, you know, you're right, you need to have that different skill set.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because you and I, Stuart, we've visited Benfica before, and that's the way they do it. You know, so we looked at the, we followed under, I was there fortunate enough to be there last week, and we followed under-19s every day leading up to their game at the weekend. Yeah. And their coach, Louise, he's been 14 years at the club, but he's not been under-19 coach for 14 years. You know, he's worked, it's exactly what you've explained there, he's worked his way up through the age groups. And I forget the guy's name, sure, you'll probably remember who went to then assist Henri, when Henri got the job.
Gilles Tralion.
Yeah, and he'd worked his way, I think he was similar, maybe 14 years within the club, working his way up, under-23s coach, and then eventually Henri pinches him when he gets the job as well. So there is that, you know, there is that learning. Yeah. But it's just, and different people, you know, it's horses for courses, isn't it? You'll get that, I suppose, because of your playing background at the club, you got that opportunity to, I suppose, you know, jump in at that level almost, which a lot of people would die for as well, wouldn't they?
Yeah, of course, of
a lot
course.
Of people, but you've been fortunate enough to get that level, but you've done your coach education and having alongside it, which is hopefully stood you in good stead.
Yeah, coach, and I've obviously worked at the short period of time at Fleetwood, but I think it's 5-6 years or something. I've obviously worked with about 4 or 5 different managers as well. So that's been a big learning curve for me as well. Obviously, you pick certain things from different managers,
people,
but
different
you go from Graham, who gave me the opportunity, but is a very like thorough manager, really thinks about the opposition and really studies the game. Stephen, who has his own set way of playing, playing out from the back and very like straight, no, this is how we do it. This is, and then to go from Stephen then to Uwe, like typical German, very very structured timekeeping, timekeeping on the training pitch, like to the second, like every drill, everything they had to do had to be a certain time limit on it. And then now to Joey, who's his first job, but a guy who is unbelievable in my opinion, tactically unbelievable, can pick certain things in games that he sees and just can change it, and most of the time it changes for the good of the team.
So they would have all brought their own, not only their own traits as a coach. Are they all playing different styles, as you've mentioned, but different formations
different
as well?
Styles,
so you're learning, and there's fantastic
time, all the time. And then when there's a few of the under at the minute, generally train with the first team, coach the first team every day. But I've still got, I'm sort of that link with the under 23s. Stephen Craney takes the 23s actually. And I've got that link with the two, so I get to try now. I get to try the tactical stuff that the first team are doing by going back down if two or three of the first team players are actually playing in a bounce game or whatever with that group.
Yeah, sure.
So that side of it's good as well. As I said, the learning that I've done over the period with 4 incredible managers has been brilliant for me.
Yeah, and you'll know that, Stuart, from your time and working together in Coach Ed, you know, and people phoning you, Barry, and they're wanting, can I get my assessment topic now? And you're kind of saying, well, there's only those 8, you know, there's a 4-4-2, there's a 4-3-3, whatever formations are, and there's those different topics, but learn those topics within those formations, because to my mind, a B-licensed coach and A-licensed coach should be able to put on any of those topics competently enough to become the B-licensed, not become an expert in one topic. So like, your story there is very good, actually, and a good kind of reflection of that you're having to learn all those different styles, all those different systems, so that you're a good assistant, you're a good first-team coach.
That's it, yeah. I think that's the big thing. You've got to be very, very loyal by staying at a club. And I think that's the difficult part when managers go. You don't know what's coming next. But I think if you get the chance to work closely and then learn from the next manager coming in very quickly, you become loyal and you can see what he wants and you can put that into practice with no matter what team and different.
And it helps you with that, the opposition as well. It helps you recognise, because of your experiences, it helps you recognise what they're doing probably quicker.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You're interested in there, you know, mentioned that word loyalty. You know, it's not something that's, I suppose, preached often enough on coaching courses, because we talk an awful lot about shapes and formations and styles of play and everything else like that comes with the technical and tactical side of it. But that aspect intrigues me an awful lot as well, and you're saying that you've had that experience now of working under a few different managers. They obviously see certain things in you, but you know, if you're sort of looking at your journey, Barry, and the things that you have developed, it's interesting you say you would like to have spent maybe a wee bit more time with the development squad before going into the first team, but you know, what are the kind of traits you think, you know, that serve you well? That what are your real strengths, and what are the things that you think, well, those are areas that I need to become better at if I'm going to go on and achieve the things I want to achieve in my career?
Yeah, I think at the start of the pro license we had to do a little sort of presentation ourselves, and I think I picked 4 words at the end of the presentation that sort of represented me, and it's probably what represented me as a player. It was like hard working, honest. I actually can't remember the other two.
There's a lot of good qualities.
Yeah, but like, I think coaches, especially the position I'm in just now, first team coach and working with younger, I think you just, as long as you are honest with the players, honesty is a big thing. I think it stands you in good stead. I loved when a manager told me exactly, like, this is not on, this is what we want you to do, this is, and this is, so the non-negotiables are really big for me, and that's the way that I try and coach, that especially the younger players, that just as soon as a real honesty about what we want them to do, like no like stone unturned, really.
Mm-hmm. Ah, that's with those clear expectations, and you know, like children, they like to know what the boundaries are and what I'm going to be measured against, and how I'm performing at that time, yeah, against those measurements. Yeah. You know, they like to be able to see that and feel that. And I think you're right there. You know, that's an important part of coaching. Probably over time, I don't think there's any problem about it. Over time, what we understand about the psychological aspect, I think, has changed, and probably how people are within society has changed how, yeah, that honesty is delivered.
Yeah,
you know, you've experienced it, I would imagine, the same, yeah, as I did. It was quite brutal at times.
Very, yeah.
You know, and there's obviously a time and a place to be quite forthright, but as well, there's a time and a place, you know, for the old arm around someone as well.
Yeah,
you can deliver the same honesty, yeah, but put across in a different way. Yeah. So, no, it's interesting. And if you're looking at that as some of your traits, you think, you know, that's just you as a person, or do you think that that's things that you've maybe admired or picked off of some of the other great managers? Obviously, you mentioned Alan Irvine there and Graeme Alexander, another two guys that have come through our pro licence system here.
Yeah, I think it's I think that's my character. I think that's me. I'm quite a calm person. I'm not one. I very rarely lose my head in coaching or like with any of the players. I'm quite calm. I think I'm to the point. But I just think that's me as a character. I don't think that's something that I work on or feel that I need to get better on. I just think that's me. That's me.
And in terms of you know, that learning journey, if you look at the formal stuff, the coach ed pathway you've been through, you know, then the youth license as well, as you know, going right through the B&A now into the pro. So you've got that kind of specialist knowledge as well. What are the areas then you think, Barry, that you would like to develop as a coach? You know, you're in quite a competitive sphere, if you like, and yeah, it's sometimes difficult to take that time to step back and reflect, you know, because it is about week to week, yeah, you know, preparing the team, managing the squad, yeah, et cetera, et cetera. But what are the areas for you then that you think you need to
I think I still need to like work really hard on the tactical side of the game, because I think because of like, as I say, moved up early into the first team, but the managers have generally done like tactical team shape and stuff like that, and I don't do it enough. So that's one worry for me, that if I did in the future get the head coach role, that I've probably not done enough of that at this precise moment. So I think that's something.
That's amazing you say that, and I think a quality you've got to probably add into yourself is humility, because I look at you on the pro licence and you're probably always the first to maybe give an opinion, which is a good thing, and it wouldn't show that you've got that. I'm not sure.
Yet. No, I can see it, and I can. But I've not done it. I've not actually done physically been on the pitch and done loads and loads of team shape.
Got you. Okay.
I can see it, and I kind of picture everything. And I do. It's me and at the minute, me and the manager do all. We're the two that do the analysis of the post match. So we're the two that watch. Out the coaching staff that watch our games back, and I get it, I can see it, and it's usually my clips that get used on a Monday morning in the reviewing of the game, tactical things, because it's more tactical than technical when we review it back. But I've just not done it enough on the pitch, and that's maybe not a worry, but I'm conscious of it, that I've not done enough of it.
Yeah, but you're having a huge input there, obviously.
Yeah, of course. I mean, we sit as a coaching staff and speak, and I can watch the games of the opposition, and I can pick. We split it into units, really, so I really hone in on the midfielders because I played there. So I can look at a midfield opposition and know where we can hurt them. Yeah. I've got no doubts about that, and where they can hurt us. So, but just the general of tactical team shape, I think I've not done enough of.
Yeah, it's interesting that too as well. You know, you talked there a bit about the bridge between the playing experiences and now the coaching experiences. You've got that specialist as a midfield view. I'm always kind of thinking about, you know, how much of the game always stays the same, you know, in terms of the principles of the game never change, but there's obviously trends within the game. Is there stuff that you sort of look at now, Barry, as, you know, had a successful playing career at the top, obviously three international caps, etc., and now what you're doing as a coach, where things are so similar, or things that have really evolved and changed and you haven't adapted with that? Is there any kind of key aspects within that that you look at and think, oh wow, this is so much different now to when I played?
when I played as a midfielder, I used to constantly run in behind defences, constantly, and nobody ever does it, and I feel that's a massive like thing that's changed in the game. When I remember when I was playing, there was midfielders that I'm trying to think who was playing against. Like Stylian Petrov at Celtic ran in behind defences. That's like that's the era I was playing in, and that's all I did. And I can't believe midfielders don't run in behind. Nobody does it. They all want to come to the ball and try and get on the ball. Nobody plays wide players. I very rarely see wide players playing round the corner and then going joining in. Don't see it anymore. So that's a couple of things just off the top of my head that I've total, like when I played, that was the done thing.
Yeah. So is that type of thing then with midfield players not running beyond the striker or looking to get in behind the back four, does that then shape how, you know, you guys have to prepare your own team, or does it shape, you know, how you prepare to play against
certain teams? Yeah, definitely.
There's not that threat.
Yeah, definitely. We feel that there's not enough midfielders when we play, like, we look at the opposition. We can, like, squeeze the line, because nobody's going in behind. Everybody's, like, coming all the time to feet. And then on the flip side of it, if we've got a high line, we sometimes say, like, if we're playing, we usually play 4-3-3, the number 8s have got licence to just go beyond Ched Evans, go beyond Paddy Madden. Usually Ched's the one that's sort of a striker that won't really stretch the game. Yeah. So you need somebody to stretch the game. So we're, like, constantly on to the two number 8s, like, run. Mm-hmm. And affects, even if you don't get the ball, you're going to affect something. You're going to affect a centre-half, you're going to affect a full-back, and then all of a sudden, if you don't get the ball, something. So it's, yeah. I think it's simple.
Yeah.
A simple thing for a midfielder to do is run forward. So we try and get them to do that.
And it's that type of thing, as an example, that I'm always, as I say, intrigued by, because the principle of the game in there from an attacking perspective is penetration. You know, you need to go and get in behind the back four if you're going to create chances to score. You know, and if it's not your midfield players doing it, or if it's not wide players, you know, being a little bit more in the old orthodox wingers and trying to beat fullbacks 1v1 and get crosses in, you know, where is your penetration coming from? So it's interesting.
Sort of I feel young in my coaching career, but I feel that's a little bit old school. But yeah. It's a massive part of the game. I just can't. We sit on the side, and honestly, you shout, run. It's like just run.
Go on.
Just run. Help. And it's like, and if honestly, if people run, things happen. Yeah. But and that's. It's simple, but it's a.
Well, it's the other principle of the game, the mobility.
Run.
If you're mobile, you go, whether you're running beyond or you're running across, you're affecting the opposition in terms of their organisation defensively.
Yeah, I think that's another trait of mine, a bit like unselfish, and I call that unselfish. Mm-hmm. Like midfielders have got to be unselfish and run forward and create space for something else to happen if they don't get the ball.
Talk about you back when you played, but you are still a young manager. You know, you're only about ages with myself. I'm maybe being a bit kind to myself there, but from the same era roughly.
Yeah.
But in terms of that journey as a coach, you know what you've been through up to now. You've spoken well about what about the sort of steps from here, Barry, and the experiences that you've taken up to now. Where do you sort of see yourself going, and hope to try and achieve?
This question gets asked all the time. When are you, like, even the people on the course here, like the pro license, are like, come on, must be time. You're going to throw your name in the hat now for a role. But I genuinely don't know, like, the right time. I think it's all about timing, and it's all about taking the right job at the right time. I've seen people going in and taking a job on, not doing well, and then all of a sudden nobody to be seen again. So that's on the back of my mind, a timing issue. And then you see Jack getting sacked 2 days ago from Sunderland, and that's another thing that puts me off. It's like, it's ridiculous.
7 games in 57.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I mean, it's even last season I spoke to them, and just the pressure that was on them, even although they get to the playoff final, and the pressure is so big. So all these things are like juggling in my head about timing, about not getting the right time once you get a job. So I'm really happy in the role that I'm in at the minute. As I say, the club of, I'm sort of half doing a sort of role at the minute. It's a bit like head of technical development, which is sort of in between, but I've taken not a step away from the first team, because as I say, I'm still day-to-day training with the first team and coaching with the first team, and a big part to play in how they play on a Saturday, but I've took that little step more to the side and tried to work with Stephen with the 23s. and Simon Wiles at the 18s that we're really trying to hone in on the individuals that we can really, really push to into Joey's team. So that's basically, it was happening at the club, but I'm more sitting sort of trying to head that up a little bit.
Back to that hard working trait, are you? It doesn't seem as if you've got many minutes in the day left.
No, it's tough, but I love it. It's brilliant, and it's a lot of the stuff was done pre-season. Like, I got back from Bologna and was straight in the next day, and that's why I needed to get back. I needed to get back from Bologna to get into really, really sort of bed down individual programmes for we've done it for all the players, but really honing in the ones that have got a real opportunity of breaking into Joey's team. So. I'm enjoying it, it's good.
People speak an awful lot about some of the things you said there around, you know, not rushing into things or taking the first opportunity that comes about, and a lot of it comes down to, you know, hear advice from some of the real experienced managers who've been through a few clubs and a few ownerships and everything else like that that comes with it, and I think, you know, that becomes quite evident that, you know, sometimes you have to be quite choosy, and it seems like you're well respected, obviously because of the work you do and how you carry yourself in there at Fleetwood. And it's interesting now to note that you're sort of taking on that role, starting to develop almost an identity for the players and an identity for the team and the club and all that to go by. So
I think the club are actually going to try and go Category 2 down in England next year, which is a massive thing for the club, more funding. The academy's grown. It's still a young academy. The academy's only been going for like 2-3 years, but it's growing every year. And when I sat down and spoke to the chief exec in the summer, it was like, basically, we feel that you're the right person for the role. We don't want to open it up to anybody else. So, I mean, the manager Joey didn't have a problem with it, but he wanted to make sure that I was still working with him. So he didn't want me just taking that role with no input at first team level. So that was obviously nice to hear as well. And it's been a role that I've been able to sort of gel the two together without too much fuss. It's obviously hard work and a little bit more work for me, but it's something that I really enjoy. And we've had a good few debuts from youth team players, from development squad players, and the manager's been quite keen to try and introduce them as much as he can into the daily day-to-day training as well. So when you've got a manager like that, it makes that job and that role a bit easier as well. The level of our first team at the minute in the summer, the Joey got basically every target that he was going for. The chairman backed him and got the players in. So the actual standard of the first team has gone up a notch from last year, and that's been a little bit of a worry for us because we've not recruited anybody for the development squad, so it's the same boys that were there last year. So I think the distance has gone,
the like level up, they're aspiring to play at
has opened up. And that then becomes a challenge for ourselves, but also for the manager who wants to put these young players in and gets impatient that the level has gone there.
And so that work you're kind of doing, you say, like, kind of developing an identity and looking at those personal plans, you think that is one of the real key programs within the club to kind of help try and bridge that gap? You know, it's obviously a longer term view and whatnot.
I think so. I think we've basically tried to put these individual programs into these players, and but also the development squad now mirror everything that the first team do. So they very often, there wasn't a lot of staff at the 23s last year or the development squad last year, and sometimes, like, after game reviews got missed, and didn't look back on like individual video clips a lot with individual coaches. And I think for players at that age group, need to, like, the more video analysis the better for them. So we've made sure that we've got each player gets their individual clips going through by a coach, and each game's now reviewed heavily on certain areas, what we've been working on. They get everything now, as well as all the individual stuff that they need. It's so important.
No, terrific. I mean, going back to probably where we started a little bit with this, you know, in your coaching journey and through the formal side and the informal side, it's that type of thing I think that coaches really need to be aware of as they go through it, that you know, it's more than just turning up and running a training session and making sure that I've got a good passing drill or a good possession activity or a good practice to help building out from the back or something like that. There's so much more that comes into working with players and working with teams. Certainly if you're looking at, you know, the spheres you're working in there, developing players to go and play in first teams and working with first team players to make sure that they're continuing to develop themselves but also helping the team achieve results. So you're looking at that individual aspect within the video analysis, but also from a team perspective, the tactical side of things.
Yeah. The video analysis side is something that I've worked really hard on. I love it, and I love watching games back. Until probably the summer, all I did was watch the video, but then I sent clips to the analyst, and he clipped it up for me. But so in the summer, actually, we used the platform Huddle. Mm-hmm. Which is an unbelievable tool, and so I've learned it's very, very easy to. So I now clip my own clips, and you can just like do the clips, send them to the player's email, and then they can come in the next morning having watched, and they can have fed back on the platform. So that I think it's invaluable. I think, and we can turn around to a player and say, right, your individual clips are now on the platform. Give me three things that we spoke about before the game. Clip them up yourself. So the players are now clipping them up themselves as well. It's like. That for me is it's massive.
Yeah, and that's, I suppose, when you get down to sort of coaching style and looking to you know, involve players in their own learning. You know, they're looking at you expecting, you know, these types of things. I want to see my clips, you know, feed me, you know, give me, go back to what we were saying before, being honest with players. Yeah. Well, you can't be any more honest than a videotape because it can't lie. That's the picture, that's what took place. Yeah, but the players actually seek that feedback. And you say, it's interesting you mentioned that you're looking to get them then involved in identifying, well, you know, what are the things that I can improve on from those clips or what are the things that I've done well in these clips. You know, they want to be involved in their own learning and development process.
Definitely. There's I think the big word that's been used in the pro license a lot is clarity, and there's no total clarity when you show them a video. It's something that as a young player I wish I had, because it wasn't really video analysis when I was playing. Certainly not individual clips, and a coach sitting with you going through everything and saying, "No, you could have done this," but we didn't get it. But so I think it's such a brilliant thing for young players these days.
And we'll just refer to the pro license, so probably one more time, Barry, before we end up looking to wrap it up. Any other aspects, you know, away from the pitch that you sort of think have been really particularly beneficial? You know, this is a broad range, and most people probably in simple terms describe the pro license as having more of a balance on some of the management aspects rather than the kind of technical, tactical, and the training pitch environment. Is there particular aspects within that that you think have been beneficial to you or prompted you to think a bit more about certain aspects?
Yeah, the management side of it, like the boardroom role play and everything, I didn't think I was going to enjoy it, but I absolutely loved it. I loved the boardroom role play, I loved it. I was the chairman. It was brilliant. But the one thing that I took, the negotiation game was amazing with Stephen Morrow.
Yeah, up in Stirling, you know. Yeah,
it was amazing. We done the one with the bricks where you had to go and speak to people about and try and share them. It was brilliant, and that was taking you out of your comfort zone. You know, it's and it was brilliant. I think I liked it because me and Big John Daly and somebody, I think we won, our team won.
It's brilliant.
But no, it was that side of it. It really interested me. Negotiating in the boardroom. So it's just something that I've never done before. So I took a lot away from that, and we've got an assignment to do, haven't we? Soon about that.
Yeah,
about a management skill.
Yeah, which is about, you'll remember it, Stuart, the one about your friend or a colleague or an acquaintance, I think, who does a job in another industry.
Well, we've done that one.
You've done that one.
Yeah, we've done
you?
That one. It's the one now. I think we're going to pick up on like a management technique or something that we're, and then we're going to how we use it in our role day to day.
Yeah, remember mine well, Stephen. Two parts, because you had to go and explain, you know, essentially what you're going to focus on. Look at that particular aspect over a period of time, 6 months, 12 months, and then come back with part two and say it worked or it didn't work. No, I kind of focused a little bit of mine, again, around that communication element. You know, how is it you communicate with players in the modern day as opposed to previously? You know, the old, you get someone to the manager's door, whereas, you know, maybe more now it becomes a bit about, they're used to a text message every now and again, and you can actually reach people in WhatsApps and everything else like that. So you're right, you know, it's interesting, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, no, it's the course has been great. It's been, as I said at the start of it, the group helps, because I think everybody gets on, and which they do naturally. And I think everybody's, when I've spoke to the lads who have done the pro licence in years gone by, and I think they all say that the sitting at an hour at night with people that you wouldn't normally socialise with, and all of a sudden you're sitting in a hotel room at night, and it's like Pauline, for instance, in Italy, had a good half hour with Pauline, somebody that I wouldn't normally speak to, things like that, just a bit different ideas about football, and just in like people like Mark Spalding doing a different role to me over in America. It's just you pick up loads of different things.
Sometimes it's just about being in that environment to get that kind of added learning, isn't it? Rather than the course itself.
That's
course
it. Yeah, you pick up loads on the
might
course.
Start the conversation, but then that'll obviously spin off a lot.
Yeah, that's it. It does. It sparks loads of stuff, and then you just end up chatting to people all night and picking up loads of things. And some things you take with you, and some things you think, I wouldn't do that, but that's the game, isn't it? That's it.
Greg, anything else from you? Before we let this man get on and watch
the game. Maybe just a quick message, Barry, for just as you're chatting there about you, maybe, you know, your kind of admittance or reflection back on your own career. What would be your messages back to young aspiring coaches, perhaps, that have got those opportunities to work with under 12s just now or under 14s and maybe listening in?
Yeah, but I would any young players out there, I would get the badges done as soon as possible. I would get them done even as soon as you can. I think it's going to get more and more difficult to get jobs, to get roles after you stop playing. So get them done, be prepared, and just get them done. That's all I would say. The journey's brilliant. And so you pick up on each course that you go on, you learn loads of different people, and you get to network. I think it's an important part of getting a role now at the end of it as well, is your networking. Just speaking to loads of people, getting yourself out there. So I would do it as soon as possible.
You made it clear, obviously a young coach still, but you're achieving an awful lot, and I'm sure there's a lot more to come. Thanks very much for your time.
No, thank you.
Barry, all
thank
the best.
You. Thank you.
All the best.
That's all we have time for in this week's edition of the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast. Feel free to send us your feedback, your ideas for coaching topics you want us to cover, and to get in touch, visit @ScottishFA on Twitter or email info@scottishfa.co.uk.